It's time to go out and...
Hello, everybody, from the nightclub at the end of the world. Here in the San Luis Valley in South Central Colorado, it is the 12th of May, 2013. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. And got a heavy heart. You have to be a grown-up show tonight. And I published that on Facebook. And our numbers are down a little bit, but the ones who didn't listen tonight are nowhere near as important as the brave ones who chose to. I planted today. It's May the 12th. It's the first crop we've put in the ground here. We had what we believe was our last frost snow here on Monday of this week. It was pretty nasty, but short growing season here, harsh place. But I planted poppies today. I'd tilled the soil repeatedly and enriched it with horse manure and a little wood ash, and put some poppy seeds in the ground for the opium poppy, for a time in the future, for a time when I might take these organic poppies that were very specially given to me, a special batch of seeds, and I can refine them to larger and larger bulbs with the thought that someday, should it be needed, there will be pain medicine available as things continue. But the act of planting, the act of doing that, is really a supreme act of faith and belief. It is a statement that we expect life to go on, and it is kind of a contradiction, I guess, if you consider the things that we find ourselves compelled to talk about tonight. Our dear friend Carolyn Baker, who subs for me on this show, carolynbaker.net, wrote, published an essay this week on the 6th, Preparing for Near-Term Extinction, which she put up at her website, carolynbaker.net, Speaking Truth to Power, and Guy McPherson also picked up. Those are two really good people and really good friends of ours here. But I want to read you some of that before we start talking about what's happening with nuclear reactors tonight. And bear in mind that Carolyn wrote this primarily referencing, or at least in terms of the excellent essay itself, just the fact of climate collapse, the climate change, which we know is underway, irreversible, and will lead to extinction. But we're going to look at things, I guess, in stereo tonight. But she wrote in Preparing for Near-Term Extinction, when I began writing this article, a friend of mine had recently entered hospice. While I was finishing my article, my friend died. She was not in the same town as I, but during the past month, we had been able to speak by phone several times a week. Given my friend's decline and death and its impact on me, I was not taken aback by Daniel Drumright's essay, The Irreconcilable Acceptance of Near-Term Extinction, posted last week at Guy McPherson's Nature Bats Last blog. I recommend going there, catching that article as well. Carolyn writes, the timing of its arrival and my awareness was completely synchronistic with my friend's death, so rather than shuddering, I finished the essay. As I finished the essay, I said to myself, yes, of course. Drumright's thesis is simply that we must accept that humanity has now crossed numerous irreversible climatic thresholds, and that by so doing we have ushered in intractable near-term extinction, acronym NTE, of most life within the next several decades. In other words, NTE is a veritable certainty in our existences on this planet as a human species is about to end. As I write this article, I'm going to assume that NTE is valid and certain. Well, if you weren't, Carolyn, my dear friend, assured of it, you will be. Now, she continues, and there's a really cool quote she has a little bit later in the article before we start talking about nuclear reactors. She writes, I invite the reader to consider the possibility that we are now entering a period of hospice for ourselves and with each other. Never before in human history or in our own personal history has our full embodiment, the healing of the mind-body split, been as urgent as it is at this moment. Never before have we so desperately needed to reflect upon our lives and find meaning in them as we do now. That set a great tone. Now, what happened this week? This was probably Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. I don't know. But Arne Gundersen, who we have really applauded for his candor and his professionalism as a nuclear engineer since the Fukushima disaster through his organization's Fair Winds, FAIREWINDS.org. Fair Winds has really been an amazing monitor and watchdog on telling us the truth about the situations at the plants. And I have had enormous respect for his professionalism and his dignified presentation of extremely alarming facts. But I have, as of this week, I have a horrible love-hate relationship with Arnie Gundersen. He gets an A-plus for his professionalism, his scientific knowledge, assessment, analysis, the clarity of his presentation without hyperbole. But he gets an F for missing the forest, and even in his presentation. Now, if you want to hear this, it's like a 22-minute tape that went up on May the 8th, I believe it was, at fairwinds.org, and it's his latest radio, if you will, podcast, describing situations at several plants around the world. And I listened to it. I said, yeah, that's Arnie got, that's good. Thank you, that's good. But at the end, I was struck because, well, let's just connect. And this will be the thought process that I went through as I was listening to Arnie. I'm not going to play it. But the broadcast was called Nuclear Regulators Stick Their Heads in the Sand, Fair Winds Energy Education, fairwinds.org. He was talking about the Palisades nuclear plant in Michigan. A tritiated water, that is contaminated water, with water contaminated with radioactive tritium, has been leaking for 2 years from a tank directly over the control room in the plant. Yes, that's right. They have a 300,000-gallon tank of water that they use to flood the reactor core when they're refueling, which gets contaminated with hot particles, and then they have been pumping it back down into an aluminum tank, 46 years old, which sits directly above the control room, and all the wiring, all the circuitry to control the plant, and it's leaking into the control room, and they're catching it in buckets and like 2-liter Pepsi bottles. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has granted multiple waivers for the Palisades nuclear plant, one of the oldest in the country. Red lights going off everywhere about safety hazards there. They've had prior shorts involving 50% loss of power into the control room. The leaks are now expanding. They're up to 90 gallons per day. It was like 2 gallons a day. Now they're up to, in other words, the tank is failing. Now, if that tank fails, then the control room gets flooded with radioactive water, which shorts all the controls out and makes the control room inoperable because you can't go in there. Okay, this report on Fairwinds also said that they're about to empty the tanks, the big tank again, into milk trucks, which they've been doing. God knows where that water is going. Hot particles have been detected outside. The plant has had 3 near-miss emergencies, and it's beyond rickety. Now, Entergy, which has owned the plant, the company Entergy, for 6 years, has spent nothing on maintenance. Why? There's no profit in it. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. Fairwinds notes at the same time that the Kewaunee nuclear plant that's much newer, has 20 years left on its operating license, has never had any problems, has been shut down because it's not profitable. Now, the plant has to go into safe store for 60 years until it can be dismantled. 60 years. That's passing the costs on to the grandkids. Do you really think that in 60 years we're going to have a nice, huge economic recovery that's going to provide all the money for this? Is Mother Earth going to provide the concrete, the steel, the jobs, the oil to drive the trucks there? This is where I started to say, Arnie, snap out of it, because they mention actually in the Fairwinds broadcast, evolving Fort Calhoun, which at CollapseNet back in June of 2011 we were covering extensively. Not only was the plant flooded because it was built in the wrong damn place, It also had had leaks and leaks of radioactive material. It had been overwhelmed. We were monitoring Fort Calhoun and the Cooper nuclear power plant nearby. I just keep track. That's three we've talked about that have trouble. But then you have to remember the Wolf Creek nuclear plant in Kansas. There's a $25 million lawsuit saying the Wolf Creek nuclear plant might melt down in court. Kansas Power and Light, is defend. No, there's no money to defend against this, to repair it or to address it. Now, as we start to see all of these things, I thought, wait a minute. Last week, we talked about how San Onofre has got critical leaks, and they're addressing the critical leaks in San Onofre with plastic bags, tape, and broom handles. We have documented at CollapseNet serious problems at Vermont Yankee. There's tritiated water leaking out of there. That's near Montpelier, Vermont. And then we get back, and we will come back in great detail to Fukushima. What Arnie said in the report was that Building 3, the one which had a catastrophic explosion, there was an iron roof girder which had 54 rems, a huge amount of radioactivity in a roof girder where it's not supposed to be. Meaning that if it's a roof girder that far out from the reactor, it's only going to get worse inside the reactor, and you will get a lethal dose, I think a 50-50 chance of a lethal dose standing next to that girder for 4 hours. The radiation inside Building 3 at Fukushima is so high that human beings cannot even approach it, go in. This is the building that we talked about where the radiation was so high that it was disabling robots, and that designs for robots to get in there had not yet been designed. And Fukushima is deteriorating rapidly. I'm going to scroll ahead and talk some more about that before we come back to Hanford and some other things. But also on Facebook this week from Fukushima Diary, this showed up. The vice principal of Minamisoma Hospital shudderingly scary data. The stroke rate has spiked 3.4 to 4 times since the earthquake and nuclear incident at Fukushima. That's men in between 35 and 64 just having a stroke, dropping dead, falling over. And these are all the side effects. We have seen other scary data over time about thyroid issues and cancers, but the chickens are coming home to roost now. This is not some future issue. Low doses of radiation cause heart disease and stroke. The story was confirmed from Energy News, hospital official in Fukushima. Extremely scary data, stroke rate spiking in people ages 35 to 64. I don't know about you, I don't see too many 35-year-olds having strokes, do you? Now, we put that in context. We have reported that TEPCO is losing the ability to control it. In other words, it is barely treading water. We talked about stories now over the last 2 weeks about that. The situation is not only under control, the amount of control which exists is diminishing. And TEPCO is about to go bankrupt, which is one of the issues that we discussed early on after this, because then it falls on the Japanese government, which is already broken. This continues. But I was very suspicious, and thanks again to Robin Westenra for catching this week. The Japan Times had a story that Japan's military and Coast Guard were holding a full-scale joint exercise, field exercise, off of Fukushima to do a terrorist drill this week. And I thought, why would a terrorist, that's a great dirty bomb already. It's already doing what it's supposed to do. What's the point? That, of course, does not stand the sniff test for critical thinking. But it does stand a sniff test if one is presupposing the Japanese government's preparation for a major catastrophic incident, which goes, and apparently there's some people in Japan who feel the same way. There's a Mochizuki Iori wrote, I believe it was in the Japan Times, but it was someplace that the revival in the military revival and Japan's constitution is up to be rewritten, scrapping, remilitarizing the company, is essentially opening the door to the restoration of a military dictatorship. And he wrote that the military revival in Japan will bring a draft which can be used to draft nuclear cleanup workers because there's a short of them. Yes, they're dying. So we're already in this soup. This is not, as I listen to the Fairwinds message, a great fax, you know, but they're talking like, well, gee, we really need to reform the Nuclear Regulatory Commissioner. We need to elect some politics. We need to appropriate more, and yet they're missing the fact. What about the nuclear reactors in Mexico? What about nuclear reactors in India? What about nuclear reactors in Pakistan? What about nuclear reactors in really, really rickety countries? Apparently we are. Do you think they're going to be maintained and shut down when it takes, you have to secure the material for a million years longer, ostensibly, as the official meme would have us believe, than mankind has been alive? The pyramids, have only been up, according to the meme, 5,000-6,000 years. We have to build structures to house this poison for a million years, safe from every possible contingency. Well, we have this many reactors out of control, and it's obvious. And remember also that 2 weeks ago I reported here that Barack Obama, while we were all focused on the Boston bombing, obsessed with it, with a stroke of a pen, upped the levels of acceptable background radiation in drinking water and atmosphere, what was it, 50,000 times or something like that. Now, from the Scientific American on May 9th, we have also talked here about the Hanford nuclear waste dump in Washington State. And first it was three buried tanks had leaked, and then it was five or seven, and that was the last that we heard. Well, guess what? That number is now up to more than 60 of the 177 tanks have already leaked. This is a quote from Scientific American, and all are at risk, increasing risk to do so. Quote, solving the problem is urgent. Scientific American's headline for this story, which was picked up by Cryptogon, Hanford nuclear waste cleanup disaster. But the Scientific American's headline, that's what Cryptogon had. Scientific American said it right. Hanford nuclear waste cleanup plant may be too dangerous, Scientific American. It may be too dangerous to clean it up. Well, if you don't clean it up, then all of those 107, they're all going to leak. This is collapse. This is what we had talked about for so long and screamed for so long about. And now it is almost apparently, obviously, too late, which changes our energy and changes our space. That's why I started with this hospice stuff tonight. First of all, we have to face where we're at. Going to play a new white trash song in a minute, and I hope both of these songs kind of fit tonight. Der Spiegel on May the 10th, as if we didn't have enough information. Nuclear Headache, Task of Decommissioning Plants is Herculean by Gerald Traufeter. And basically what they write is, this is Der Spiegel, the dismantling of Germany's nuclear power plants will be one of the greatest tasks of the century as the country moves to phase out atomic energy. It will take at least until 2080 to complete the job. But what happens if energy utility companies who own the facilities go bust before the work is done. Somebody's read Crossing the Rubicon. Somebody's listened to all of us. Those are good questions, but it's kind of obvious now. They're being asked too late. The Germans and the Germans have been far ahead of anybody else. I think the Finns have done the best job. There was a great movie, and I forget the name of it, that came out of Finland about the vessel that they're building to contain their nuclear waste for 1 million years, and it's a very touching story. I wish I could remember the name. But the Der Spiegel article closes with this. The issue is nuclear waste and its safe disposal. Germany will have to build a storage facility deep underground that can survive the ravages of wars, revolutions, and even another ice age. Indeed, the remains of the nuclear age will have to be kept in a final repository for 1 million years, longer than the human race has existed. Now, if these are the plants that we know about, and we are hearing of radioactive water being caught in buckets and Pepsi Cola bottles, and all these problems in all these reactors, we have to understand that our death by radiation poisoning is underway, and may well come faster than it is coming from climate collapse and the reorganization, the restructuring of the climate on our Mother Earth. So, deep, dark stuff. We're going to push through this because there is no other choice. We are going to walk through this, and I'm here walking through this with you. But now it's time for a new white trash song. Inner Reach, the Inner Reach is our new album, and Doug Lewis is doing a yeoman's job of mastering. We're scrimping pennies and getting some of these really amazing songs done and up. And this falls under the category of me going out and planting something today that I expect to be able to harvest in the fall. It's an expectation, the sowing of an energetic belief in a future where things are good or better. But this was a song that came up in the heart of winter here, and it's a dark song, but it tells some truth. It features Kristen Vigard, me, Doug Lewis, Bob Rice has also played some tracks on this. Here's a new white trash song, Foreign Soldiers.
Start, there's ones that we choose. How do they give me a clue? How do they start? There's ones that we choose. How do they give me a clue? Yeah, how do they start? There's ones that we choose. How do they?
Someone's always fighting for the profit of a war.
Another way, another life.
Foreign Soldiers from Inner Reach, New White Trash's new album. And New White Trash, it was Kristen Vigard singing the lead on that. I was singing backup, bum, bum, but that one, Dougie Lewis. I think we had some Leah Petmezis and some Jessica Hollow-Peter background vocals there. And Bob Rice with instrumentation, newwhitetrash.com. You can find the song at the site. We've got, I think, 9 or 10 of our new songs up there. You can get them for free. You can download them. Just pay $0.00, or you can pay a penny, or you can pay $1 million for a song. Gee, we'd love to have that. But help yourself. Check it out. We do believe that over the course of this winter, we wrote some songs which are fitting nicely into what's fitting nicely. Yeah, which are complementing our, which go along with what's going on out here. Yeah, newwhitetrash.com. Okay. We're coming up on a break now. Bloomberg had a story this week. And what I'm getting at is all this. We got to understand, to quote Derek Jensen, we're fucked. We're totally fucked, but life is great. Life is certainly intense and real and tastes, it's being alive. It can be depressing and stressing, but it's what we choose to do with that that's going to make all the difference in the world. So Bloomberg had a story this week. Resource strain pushes Coca-Cola and Dow to put price tags on nature. This, of course, is nothing new to us. We understand that this is what has been done to Mother Earth and what is free, our water, our air, the land, as our indigenous brothers and sisters here on Turtle Island maintained so strongly for so long. You can't own the earth. She belongs to herself. And only when you have killed everything will you discover that money means nothing. Bloomberg writes, the practice called natural capital accounting is a way for companies to accurately assess and manage risk, maintain their social license to operate. What is that? Manage or lower operating costs and secure a competitive advantage, the representatives say. Increasingly scarce resources, growing competition for those resources, and population growth are some of the factors prompting companies to look at valuing and protecting natural capital, said Denise Knight, sustainable agriculture director for the Coca-Cola Company. Oh, my God, this Orwell stuff is, like, too thick. Companies like Coca-Cola are working, says Bloomberg, one-on-one with organizations such as the Nature Conservancy and the World Wildlife Fund to assign a monetary value to natural resources such as clean water and the services they provide, and then use those calculations in making business decisions. Efforts to establish standard methodologies across companies or industries for conducting natural capital accounting are underway, but still in the early stages. Well, those books are going to be cooked, and so is the planet. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages.
All the streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty.
Yeah.
And we're going to play, we have a new version of that. So many of you, thank you very much, like that song, and you let us know about it. We think it's a great song. And we have a new version with a change in lyrics in there, from Age of Aquarius at the end to Age of Authority. And we're going to play that again tonight because it really fits with what's going on. Because what we're witnessing here is the authority of money, the authority of a false god, the authority of a god that has no power save the power that we give it, and save our acquiescence to it. Now it's becoming clear that, as many of us realized a year ago, Guy McPherson being one, I won well more than a year. It was last February and March that the multiple points of no return had been crossed. Then it was might have been a psychological question of, well, how much time do we have before? And the answer tonight is no time. It's happening right now. There is no possible way on earth that that the human race can collectively get a handle on 450 nuclear reactors. Spirit knows how many of which are being held together by chewing gum and spit wads. But we passed some milestones this week. Greenhouse gases. This actually hit quite a few places. It was a big story. The Guardian did it. Bloomberg did it. Greenhouse gases hit a threshold this week unseen in 3 million years. We touched on it last week. But that seemed to sink in, along with awareness that there is connection with that and the horrendous climate change that is taking place. It has been 3 million years since we had 400 parts per million for the first time since researchers began tracking the data. That doesn't mean we were tracking for 3 million years, but since we were able to track. But we have the stored Arctic ice cores and all the records of the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. Never, it hasn't been that high in 3 million years when, you know, there were sharks the size of 747 swimming around. Temperatures were also 2 degrees Celsius higher than in pre-industrial times. The polar ice caps were smaller. Gee, does that sound familiar? And sea levels were 20 meters or 66 feet higher than today. That's apparently, now picture a 20-foot increase in sea level around the major metropolitan areas of the world. And if that isn't enough for you guys, you know, I've kind of come to a conclusion that there are 5 horsemen of the apocalypse, at least for the world that we in, and they all have sounded boots and saddles, and they're all rising. We're going to talk about some more of those for the rest of the show, but we need to face this, and I'm going to try to come to a point. What are the 5 horsemen? Climate collapse, well documented. We know that's here. Radioactive contamination, that is obvious. Disease, we're going to talk in a few minutes about 3 new spreading diseases. And drought, especially exacerbated thanks to fracking, which is using up at a rapacious rate remaining fresh water supplies around the world that we need to drink, that we need to grow our crops with. Oh, but, well, there's the radiated water or the fracked water, and war. The United States admitted this week that we are involved, that the United States is involved in 74 wars around the world, 74 conflicts around the world. So those horsemen are not coming next week. They're here now, and they are eating us now. The die-off is underway. It is beginning. Of course, you could add another horseman there, the 6th, which would be food poisoning. Poisoning by food and genetically modified organisms, which can transform our genes and DNA. We are dying off, that just kind of takes me to a story that I heard in AA a long time ago about a guy who was on the Titanic and it was sinking. And he's standing on the bow as it's going under. He says, "I'm not getting off this ship until I find out why this happened." understanding is the booby prize for us now. And I have to stand with Carolyn Baker, and I have to stand with Guy McPherson and say we are in a hospice place now. We are not only terminally ill, we are openly dying, and it cannot be hidden. And, you know, if the frack water doesn't get you and the radiated water doesn't get you, there you can get the beaver-sized rodents that are devouring Louisiana. They're moving into Texas right now. I mean, anyway. So with all of that happening, somebody posted, and this was so true about how we deal with situations like this. Somebody posted on Facebook and talked about what the real test for us is are we still trying to live in the face of this? Are we still trying to persevere? And there was an inspirational story this week, because we have to take lead from those who lead, and indigenous peoples are doing that. On May 10th, I got an a message on Facebook from Rick Morse. How you doing, Mr. Rupert? Just wanted to pass along this information to you. Thanks for your work, Rick Morse. Please contact the main media in your country about what is happening on the site of the Belo Monte Dam right now. That's in Brazil. For 8 days, over 200 indigenous people have been occupying the construction site, stopping work on the dam. They are now surrounded by troops. The journalists who have managed to get down there have been rounded up and are being kept away from what's happening, and now President Dilma Rousseff of Brazil is going to allow the troops to use force to remove the indigenous people. All they are asking is that the law is upheld here, for this dam is being built illegally because no prior consultation took place with the tribes who would be so badly affected by the Belo Monte Dam and the many other dams being built. Impending genocide is coming to them, and Dilma Rousseff doesn't give a damn. She has refused to meet with Chief Raoni. It was one of the most compelling pictures I've ever seen of him crying when the news was announced a couple months ago in Brazil that all of his tribal lands were going to be flooded, just destroyed, rainforest, pristine primal rainforest. The President Rousseff of Brazil has refused to meet with any of the indigenous people. Many who backed her presidential election went on to be given contracts to build the Belo Monte Dam. They're suppressing the news about what's going on in Brazil and about the fact that these people are putting their lives on the line, these indigenous people, to protect the earth, because they are the earth and we are they, and we are all connected, and they are trying, still fighting the good fight. And many spiritual people, I've received many spiritual messages, recognize now that a purification is coming and is essential. And yet, I am inspired by the people who continue to live as if there was something to fight for and a statement to be made. And so we just have to be more selective now, perhaps, as to what statements we make. When I talked about disease, there are three new strains of infectious diseases: the bird flu, the swine flu, and a SARS coronavirus that are moving rapidly around the world and that have triggered several major alarm events, because apparently, especially in the case of Saudi Arabia, where it's a SARS-like coronavirus, is transmitted human to human, not animal to human. And we know that having created these genies, we are not controlling bioweapons, biological organisms that we deliberately create or accidentally create, any better than we are controlling nuclear reactors. France has confirmed the first case of a new SARS-related virus, which came from, I believe, from Saudi Arabia, but it's spreading, and it's not a pandemic yet, but there are three new strains. I find that significant. I have never seen three new viruses appearing at the same time and apparently mutating and spreading reasonably rapidly. Of course, we will not be told the truth about that, but disease is not some future event. I also wrote a chapter in Crossing the Rubicon on gene-specific bioweapons, which were actively pursued and have been for 20-25 years. And apparently some people are paying attention. Flu infections are rising among pigs in southern China. Of course, that's where we had the 17,000 however many pigs in the Shanghai water supply. And I didn't get a chance to look at this too closely, but on the World News Desk tomorrow, Kolapsnik, there's going to be an amazing map and a graphic, if you remember Kolapsnik, if you want to see this. There's a circle drawn roughly around China, Japan, Korea, the Philippines, Southeast Asia, and Eastern Russia, Kamchatka. And the circle is about that big, but it says more people on the planet, more than one half of 7 billion people live inside that circle than live outside that circle. Now, where is a lot of this happening? Fukushima's inside the circle. A lot of the flus are inside the circle. And that's a very interesting thought. But it is clear to me that the population reduction, the die-off, is not some future event. It is underway. It's starting. As a matter of fact, the New York Times on May 9th, just 3 days ago, the next pandemic, not if but when. And again, this is where the New York Times, you know, finally has to admit, I guess, the obvious. But David Quammen of the New York Times writes, terrible new forms of infectious disease will make headlines, but not at the start. Every pandemic begins small. Early indicators can be subtle and ambiguous. When the next big one arrives, spreading across oceans and continents like the sweep of nightfall, causing illness and fear, killing thousands or maybe millions of people, it will be signaled first by quiet, puzzling reports from faraway places, reports to which disease scientists and public officials, but few of the rest of us, pay close attention. Such reports have been coming in recent months from two countries, China and Saudi Arabia. You may have seen news about H7N9, and then there's the coronavirus, and you know, so this is happening out there, and it is happening significantly. And of course, we know that we're not going to be told this, but we need to get our heads around where we are. Now, we come up, and it's time for a second New White Trash song, which is the alternate version, the second version. The authority version, we call it, of Inner Reach, the title song of the album. And I have to tell you that this song is extremely dear to me. I sing lead on it, but it was a true collaborative effort, and it was just a wonderful piece of work from the whole band, Doug Lewis and Chris Vigard, Jessica Hollopeter singing backgrounds, and Leah Petmezas and Bob Rice played tracks. But this now kind of helps us, or kind of describes the situation that we find ourselves in, recognizing that we are mortally wounded, that we are dying now. We are in hospice, if you will, and helping us to get around that, because we still hope for something good, because we know it's a transition, but you have to reach for it. And that's the title of this song. We call this Inner Reach Authority.
Lights around me in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on the zombie street, and the sirens make an eerie sound around me. Makes me cold, makes me hot, makes me freeze. And it's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet. Toys haunt the hallways, stuffing secrets up my sleeve. And the only country club around here is the cold cement under my feet. Most days I feel like a drowning man,
in a sea of drunken thieves. While this world goes on in a whirl around me, people look before they speak. And it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet,
where all the light waves meet and dance in secret, enter into the age of authority. They enter into the age of authority. They enter into the age of authority.
Explanations don't explain, and the conclusions don't conclude. When answers don't answer, and questions don't matter, and everything has gone so rude. Well, the stars incline but don't insist, and everything is done in a dancing twist. Round where all the light waves meet and dance, and it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the streets, all around where all the light waves.
They enter into the age of authority. They enter into the age of authority.
Well, we are very, very proud of that song. Bob Rice played a great bass for us there. And that's Inner Reach Authority from the album Inner Reach from newwhitetrash.com. You can get it for free, download it, listen to it. Real proud of that one, and it kind of ties us together because we still want to reach for light waves. We still want to reach. We still want to walk to put one foot in front of the other, which is what we have to do. It's what we have to do. So with all of this stuff and the five horsemen, you know, somebody typed out this week and posted it on Facebook, and maybe it's appropriate to read this now in light of what we've been talking about, in light of the space that we have been sharing, recognizing, looking at each other, and knowing that we're all dead. Of course, that's going to happen anyway. We can do the spiritual and metaphysical talk later, but there is a real aspect to the fact that these events are so far out of control, they cannot be fixed, and they are underway now. There is no future off-putting of this. It is just a matter of how long it takes to get to us, and where we are, and by what circumstances some of us will survive, and we hope for the miracle. But in the movie Collapse from 2009, it was now finished. We finished shooting in June of 2009, was the last of five shoots for that documentary, Chris Smith and Blue Mark Films. And I should tell everybody, woohoo, that I actually just got a check for like $3,400 from them. So even on top of all the piracy, I've made a little money off of that, and the film is still making money. It's on Netflix, and it's still being watched, and I don't care if you pay for it or not, but that was just a nice plus for me. In that movie, now 4 years ago, I said every aspect of human existence is on the table. As far as political party goes, they're all anachronisms. They're all products of centuries gone by. The human race now is only going to be concerned not with an ideology, but with what allows them to survive. Capitalism, socialism, and communism are all terms that need to be tossed in the trash can immediately because all of them were created on the assumption of infinite resources. Not one of those ideologies that are now dead dinosaurs, archaic fossils, not one of them recognizes that there must be a balance between growth and the resources and the planet. So forget the idea that you can have as much as you want, because until mankind surrenders to the fact that it lives on a finite planet and it must have balance with that planet, with the planet's resources, with the animal life and all other life, there can be no happiness for anything. Anything. It's all about getting balance back. And who sold me the idea that it was my destiny to grow? Nothing grows forever. There's no such thing as infinite growth. It's not possible. Look around at everything you see around you that's living. There is a cycle: birth, growth, maturation, decline, and death. The challenge being faced by the human race now is either evolve or perish, either grow up or die. God doesn't care. God's not going to play babysitter for us. The challenge is either you grow up and mature, change your minds, your consciousness, and the way you think, or you're going to perish. Everything is on the table now. God is on the table now. Every religion in the world is on the table now. They'll all be measured as standards by this is reality and this is what the religion says. And every religion in the world is going to be under a huge microscope. This is going to be the greatest age of evolution in human thinking that's ever taken place. You walk towards your fear. You embrace your fear. You don't try to hedge it. That's a part of real living as a human being, as a spiritual being. It's to embrace and encompass your fear, your love, and not run away from anything, because that's the life experience. And it's in that richness that I think we find the most beautiful art, the most beautiful music. We find the richness of what the human soul can offer. And I see all that richness buried under such bullshit. Yeah. Well, there are some great things rising now. There are some great, wonderful, beautiful parts of soul that are arising. I am, it's to see Guy McPherson and Carolyn Baker to be among the first out there with me to say, hey, look, okay, we're in hospice now. We're dying. Okay, let's talk about the reality of that, and let's approach our deaths, because death is a door. You go through it. You know, or we can go back and try to fight in a world, you know, where the Argentine government's got a modest proposal right now: either buy government bonds, or we'll put you in jail, huh? You know, or you could go to Florida, where the citrus industry is plagued by a disease with no known cure. Go live with those snails the size of beavers. Or here's a cool one from the Extinction Protocol. This went up today. A local state of emergency has been declared in western Manitoba municipality after homes in Ochre Beach were destroyed and seriously damaged by a wave of lake ice. Area officials told CBC News that the wind pushed built-up ice off Dauphin Lake on Friday, Dauphin Lake, Friday evening, and caused it to pile up in the community located on the lake's southern shore. The piles of ice, which were more than 9 meters tall, destroyed at least 6 homes and cottages, according to the rural municipality of Ochre River. Another 14 homes suffered extensive damage, with some structures knocked off their foundation. Clayton Watts, Ochre River's deputy Reeve, whatever that is, said it's a miracle no one was hurt. But these walls of ice had happened so quick, said Watts, quote, and you can't predict it, not like water slowly comes up. Watts says there are several cabins that were completely flattened. The ice came over the top of them. They've been crushed. There's nothing left. There are other cabins knocked right. Now, you could be attacked by ice. So maybe it's time, and I'm going to be working on this, and I think I'm going to be going through some changes in the next couple of months again, to now for us to find the best way to die. And what that means. And next week's show is going to be extremely important. Sal Gencarelli, do not let the Italian name fool you. He is a Uipi man. He's a medicine man, trained from the Ogallala family, or Lakota, he'll tell us, of the Godfrey Chips family, which is one of the most famous medicine families throughout Native America. They're up in Pine Ridge. He is going to be with us next week. We've had a number of calls about that. We're down to the last minute, and so all I want to say was this show was really hard. I did not want to tell you all this tonight, but I felt it was my duty and my responsibility, and the best I can do with you tonight is to swear to you and promise to you that I will be back here with you next week as we go through this together, And we will continue to try to find the best parts of ourselves to bring out, because if they are to be our last words and our last hurrah, we would like to leave the energy right and hopefully justify miracles that we hope for and the intervention of things that we cannot see. So this is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. I love you guys. I'm glad this show is done. I really had to bite the bullet for it. But now we know what the deal is, so let's refocus ourselves on that and help us all to be our best for the tests to come. I'll see you next week. Good night.